It's Wednesday, January 25th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about Last Exile and Kaguhime.
Let's do this.
So you might have noticed that the show didn't get uploaded till this morning.
Screw you, Optima Online.
Yeah, it's not even that Optima Online went down. I mean, I would have understood if they just had a problem. They had planned maintenance from midnight till 6 a.m., and the show was done, and I was just about to upload it, and then my internet died.
And it's fine if they want to have their maintenance, but they should freaking tell someone. I had to wake up when I was sleeping at, like, midnight, and Rim was bothering me about the internet being down, saying it was this and that and this and that, and it took me, like, 10 minutes to figure out it was Cablevision.
It took him a few minutes to wake up enough to realize I was talking, first off.
All right. And then it took
Scott, you realize what answers you gave me when I said the internet is down? You were laying there, and you're like, in 5 minutes, it'll... And then you just, like, trail off and roll over.
Well, that's what happens when you try to wake me up at the freaking whatever.
It was, like, 12:15. It wasn't that late.
I was trying to get... Sleep, I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep early today, probably, too.
Yeah.
As soon as we're done with this. But anyway, it freaking sucked, and they should freaking tell me when they're going to do maintenance. If they planned it out, they should tell me. That way I know, and I don't rely on it.
Yeah, some small measure of professionalism is all I ask from people.
I guess they kind of have us over a barrel, though.
Well, I guess I've discovered that despite what people tell you when you're a child, when you grow up, don't expect anyone to actually act in a professional manner about anything. Almost no one does.
Except for yourself. You should expect yourself to act in a professional manner.
Well, yeah, but I've learned that I can't trust other people to ever handle things professionally.
Nope. That's what makes us awesome. We're
professional. And speaking of professionals who can't handle themselves professionally, we all know that politicians lie.
All the time.
And that politicians ignore facts.
All the time.
Well, now there's scientific backing to this.
So the facts, which they ignore, say they ignore facts. So, yeah.
Yeah, but basically they did this study where they would give a politician various data that were true or that were false but were part of the study about an opponent and about a political ally. Things like that. And they discovered that even if they weren't intending to, politicians tended to greatly gloss over any factual information that was damaging to their cause or to anyone they cared about.
You know, you really can't blame them. If you don't want to be damaged and there's a fact that is damaging to you, you know, your choices are either say that you suck and hurt yourself or ignore it. I mean, if someone comes in... It's like if there's a knife about to stab you and somehow ignoring the knife prevents it from stabbing you, then, yeah.
Well, I mean, part of it was at one point they were given statements by either George Bush if they were Republican or John Kerry if they were a Democrat. And they would play two statements by the people in rapid succession that clearly contradicted each other. And then they were asked to consider and rate the discrepancy. They always rated the discrepancy of their opponent hundreds of times higher than the discrepancy of the guy they're supporting.
So basically, they don't consider what the facts actually are. They just say, oh, that's my side, blah. That's their side, blah.
Yeah, they seem to pick their side and stick to it no matter what, no matter what evidence is presented. They just don't even remember the evidence that is against them.
So they're just unthinking... useless people who
they're
just,
automatons.
Yeah, basically. They're programmed to be on one side or the other, and they're just stuck on that side. They don't actually think about issues or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's just fantastic.
I think anyone who doesn't know how to use the internet should not be allowed to govern, because it seems
How is using the internet any precursor to intelligence?
It's not, but the thing
is... I submit to you MySpace, 4chan, The Style Project, and FARC.
But I submit to you that even the punk kids who argue about whether the PS3 or the Xbox 360 is going to be better or which one's worth more put more thought into it than these politicians are putting into their positions.
Now, one interesting bit, they also discovered in this study that apparently Tom Hanks is awesome.
Is he really that awesome?
No, but what they did is they used Tom Hanks as a neutral person when they were doing this study. and the politicians on both sides tended to rate his statements equally.
Mm-hmm.
So they really only showed their bias when it was against if they're a Republican, a Democrat, or if they're a Democrat, a Republican.
Did they try having people who were like not Democrat or Republican say things that were very Republican or very Democratic? Like have Tom Hanks say, you know, healthcare for everyone is great, or
no,
is great.
They were only evaluating statements of fact.
Oh, okay. I get it. That would have been interesting, though, to see them evaluate, you know, political statements said by people who weren't associated with either side. You know, that way to see if they're actually even thinking about the issue at all, or just totally basing it on the person who says it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know many of the details of the study. That's just what I get from the article that I'm linking to here.
Yeah. I mean, like, imagine if, like, Bush went around. Let's say you got a recording of Bush or a fake recording of Bush saying, you know, universal health care is great. Would Republicans go, yeah, just because Bush was saying it? Or would they be like, no, because I'm a Republican?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I really want to see, that kind of thing. Because then you'll know, are they actually thinking about the issues at all? Or are they just following in tow?
I'm going to go with no on that.
Yeah. But I still want to see, get some facts, and not guesses.
But at least in some good news, West Virginia is taking steps to fight childhood obesity in an awesome way.
Hooray!
They're using Dance Revolution in their gym classes, officially. They have a 3-year deal with Konami.
Yeah, well, there used to be, I think, a bunch of schools and gym teachers all over the place figured out that DDR is the way to get kids to move their ass, and it worked at getting kids to lose weight. So, but West Virginia is the first place to say, all right, we're going to do this big time in all the schools that we can, everywhere. Whereas opposed to just, you know, a few lucky schools had cool gym teachers. Now it's all the lucky schools in West Virginia are going to have some DDR action.
It seemed to have come out of the fact that DDR was extremely successful.
Yep.
Kids actually were more fit in the school, and they didn't really give us any good data since we're not in West Virginia. It's definitely local news to them.
Yeah, well, you think about this, right? If I remember high school gym class, right, the kids who are all sporty would, let's say you were going to run the mile, because you ran the mile every gym class, right? They would, the kids who are all sporty would be like, yeah, let's go, and they'd run. And the fat kids would be like, I don't want to, and they might not even do it. They would either just sit there, or they would just walk, or they would barely run and not even try.
Wow, so I never took gym in high school, so I really have no idea.
Yeah, they had absolute, well, also in middle school and elementary school, the kids who didn't have athletic ability were not motivated to do athletics and thus remained without athletic ability.
Huh.
You know, so DDR, I think, works great because it's something that kids who have no athletic ability will still want to do and be good at because it's a fun video game. And thus, they will gain athletic abilities and lose weight and such.
Well, I'm glad that people are at least taking a creative approach to this instead of just doing the same old make them play dodgeball or force them to run.
Yeah, see, dodgeball is great and fun. And I think every kid should still play it once in a while in gym class. But it really doesn't, you know, make anyone have better health. Because if you're, you know, some fat kid, you don't really move. You just get hit right away, and then you sit down, you know?
Of course, I mean, honestly, to me, I don't think gym class should really be the operative factor here. I don't think a kid who has a bad lifestyle is going to suddenly turn around because they're taking a gym class.
No, they won't turn around because of the gym class, but actually, if, you know, I'm two ways about it. On the one hand, you know, I'm like, oh, we shouldn't have gym class in school. School's for learning.
Yeah, I was that way when I was a kid, and I didn't take gym because I didn't need to.
Yeah.
From fifth grade on, I just never took a gym class.
But at the same time, there is significant scientific evidence to suggest that when you have better, you know, physical health and such that can, you know, be gained from a gym class, that you have better mental health. And
I know.
Perform
I just
better
honestly,
in
I think that that's the realm of the parents. And if parents are raising their kids so poorly that the kids are unfit, well, the parents need to be in trouble.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, you could say the same thing. If parents are raising their kids so dumbly that they're dumb.
And you know what? I do.
Then why even have school in the first place?
Honestly, I've got a lot of gripes with the current public education system.
Oh, yeah, I got gripes with it. But I'm not saying that there should be no public education system.
No, I'm not saying that either.
Yeah, so no matter how broken it may be, I do think that some sort of physical gym activity is important and should be had and has a lot of benefits. You know, people always put it down like, oh, look at all the evils of school sports in contrast to like, you know, because it takes away from the other good things like the school music program or education time, and too much emphasis is put on this high school football team that doesn't mean anything, really. It's just BS. And there's something to that. But don't rub that off onto the perfectly good gym class, which, you know, might be the one chance you have to make the fat kid not fat. You know, and people do get, you know, they've done, like, it's true. Schools that have gym every day, even if it's like 15 minutes, half hour gym classes, those schools have a lot smarter kids than the schools that don't have so much gym or have gym less.
Well, I mean, honestly, the only reason I never took gym was that I didn't want to get all sweaty in school, and my schools never gave you enough time to actually take a shower.
Oh, okay. In our school, everyone had to take gym, normal gym, but if you wanted to, you could take, like, special gym, like net games, where you'd play any game involving a net. Which was like, you know, ping pong, tennis, badminton.
See, or you could take. I technically took a class called individual sports that was supposed to be about like badminton and ping pong and tennis and whatever. But I never actually attended it, and I still passed.
Awesome.
I just kind of signed up for it, and then I just hung out in other places in the school during that period.
Mm-hmm. They had some other games like where you'd play all the games that involved going from back and forth, basketball, hockey, soccer. All those.
Huh.
So you could take a special gym class, you know, just to play the things you wanted, or you could take the general gym class where you just did whatever. And I always took the general gym class, and I think it was like, it was every day, right? I think it was every day. And, you know, you would go to the gym class, and there was a locker room, and you change your clothes, and you had a locker. And then you did gym, then you came out, and you showered, and you changed your clothes, and you left.
There was no freaking time to shower.
I don't know, how many periods a day did your school have?
We had eight, at my high school, we had eight periods a day, 45 minutes each. That was it.
Oh, we had seven. So you had more time. Yeah, you had time in between, it was like 10 minutes in between each one.
What? We only got 5 minutes in between each one. I realized I showed up to school at like 7:30 and I was out by 2.
Oh, we showed up at 7:30 and we were out a little after 2.
Yeah, and I could take 8 classes and I got a 45 minute lunch if I wanted it. Lunch was just a class and you took it if you wanted it whenever you wanted it.
So that's, ours is a little different than that. But I guess, you know, we had time to shower. It was all good. And gym was actually a lot of fun. Like, I didn't like gym so much in middle school. It was just kind of boring. And they always made us do just, like, boring exercise things and stuff like that. But in high school, we had a lot of fun in gym doing all kinds of sports. We played, like, floor hockey and speedball and all kinds of stuff.
So my last several things of the day, for those of you who've been paying attention, have been things that in some way angered me and have driven me to righteous indignation at minimum.
Anger.
Yeah. Though at least I got a lot of positive feedback on my chiropractic bit. But today I have something that is the exact 180 degree opposite of that. These kids and what they did brought a little tiny man tear to my eye.
I like how you call them kids when they're like college kids.
I consider myself a kid when I talk about things like this.
All right.
But, I mean, these guys are the definition of testicular fortitude.
They are awesome. Fear them.
So, basically, Alberto Gonzalez, you know, Mr. Torture is Perfectly Legal.
The Attorney General of the United States of America.
Yeah. I'm not going to mince words. He's a giant asshole.
He sucks.
I mean, as political, however you want to slice it, whichever side of the fence you're on, Alberto Gonzalez is a terrible man and should not be holding that office.
I don't care who you are. If you say torture is awesome, right? First off, torture isn't even useful as an interrogation mechanism.
Yeah, I tried to explain. Of course, I tried to have this argument with some people at my job, and they're like, "Yeah, we should torture the terrorists to protect me." And they didn't seem to believe me when I told them that there are, in fact, scientific studies done by the CIA back when they used to torture people. And they discovered that torturing people is so useless, you actually get worse information.
Yeah, because when you torture someone, all they want you to do is stop torturing them.
So
they'll say whatever you want, they think that they have to say to make you stop torturing them. They'll say, yes, I did it, he did it, they don't care. They'll make up anything, you won't know what's true and what's a lie. So the CIA doesn't want to do torture, the NSA doesn't want to do torture, no one who's actually in the interrogation business wants to torture, because they know it's useless and stupid and wrong, and yet Gonzalez says we should, and it's okay. This is a bad man. A very bad man.
Well, he was at Georgetown University, and it's a school, obviously, and he was giving a little talk on a panel about the NSA spying and how it's a good thing, and people are worked up about it for no good reason. And in the middle of it, all these punk kids pull out a little bit of civil disobedience.
Woot.
And I don't know all the details, because this is just some LiveJournal post about it, but apparently they made a ruckus, and then a whole bunch more of them stormed the room with a giant banner that has my favorite quote from Ben Franklin ever: "Those who would sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither." This huge freaking banner, and they held it up.
Actually, I think what it was is a bunch of them stood up and turned their backs to him. Like, you know, he was giving a speech to a room full of people sitting facing towards him. So people standing up and facing away all in unison is kind of like, what's going on? And then kids all dressed in black with like little cowls on came in with the banner from an outside
room. Oh, I just looked at it. They're wearing the outfit that the one, you know, the famous picture of the Iraqi being tortured with the black hood on? They're wearing those.
Ah.
I didn't notice that. I was just looking at the picture in greater detail here.
Yeah, so they came in like that carrying this banner, and then they all unfurled it and held it. So
now, once someone on the panel, well, I don't need to read all the quotes from the site because you have the same link I have, but David Cole, who was a law professor at this school, after seeing this, said, "In light of this, I'm proud of the very civil disobedience that was shown here today."
Yay, civil disobedience.
So my thing of the day was awesome, but Scott's, I got to admit, is equally awesome in a completely different way.
This thing of the day, when I saw it this morning, I was like, oh my god, that is like one of the top 10 things of the day ever.
Now, we're pretty sure that it was at least mostly staged, just because the thing that they dug up in the desert, as far as we know, was ground up into bits before it was buried.
Yeah, well, let me explain the whole story. For those of you who don't know, there was an E.T., as in E.T., the extraterrestrial, the Steven Spielberg movie with, you know, E.T. Telefono la casa. Oh, I mean, E.T. phone home. I saw
what is it with you in the Spanish version of that movie?
They made us watch it in Spanish class in high school. And
we watched The Lion King in French.
Ete telefono la casa. Anyway, so they made a game for the Atari called E.T. based on the movie. And everyone says it was a terrible, terrible game. And it is a bad game, but I think it is slightly less terrible than everyone else thinks it is.
See, have you actually played that fucker?
Yes, I have.
It's mostly unplayable.
It is mostly unplayable, but it's slightly less terrible than everyone else says it is.
The cognitive dissonance between what I think I should be doing to win and what I actually need to be doing to win is immense.
Anyway, it's a terrible game, and they thought they were going to sell a hajillion copies of it because it was so awesome, and E.T. was like the most popular thing in the world in that time. But they made more copies than there were Ataris. They just made too many copies of it.
Millions of them didn't get sold.
Yeah, and, you know, not the fact that it was a bad game didn't help it. You know, they didn't even sell a copy for every Atari. Yet everyone with an Atari seems to have one.
Because there's so many.
I know.
I have one.
Yeah.
It's sitting right there.
So what ended up happening is not only did they lose a shit ton of money, but all these extra E.T. for the Atari cartridges were put in a landfill, and we're pretty sure that they were ground up. Nah, but we don't know that for sure. So this band wrote a song. They're just some band. I don't know who they are. I don't care. They made a song, and their music video was all about this Atari game. And it shows footage of them playing it. It shows them. I like the parallel where it shows them digging up the landfill to get E.T. cartridges, and it shows E.T. in the game going into a pit to collect a piece of his spaceship.
Just watch it. It's got really high production values, and it's really well done.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And it'll tell you in greater detail than we did the actual story of the E.T. cartridge.
And if you are someone who already knows the story of the E.T. cartridge, it will still entertain you and make you feel good.
Yes. So today being Anime Day, we have two anime to talk about. We're going to take a look at Kaguya-hime Monogatari AQ Alice Rondo. Most people just call it Kaguya-hime.
Yeah, that's the name that was on the torrent.
Yeah, we only watched one episode, and suffice to say, that's all we need to watch of that show. We'll get into that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about, well, actually review, Last Exile, which we're more than halfway through currently.
That's a good show.
Because basically we've decided that in terms of the way we talk about anime, there are three types of discussions we're going to have from this point on. We'll try to be very clear about what they are. Well, if we watch just like one episode and we're just going to talk about our impressions of the show, it's like a look or a preview or something like that. Once we've seen enough of the show to review it, we'll do a full-on review. And then when we've seen the end of a show, we'll always do a sort of final thoughts.
Well, if it's a good show.
Yeah, if it's
a
show that's worth
talking
about.
We're not going to do final thoughts on something that was crap.
Yeah.
We're not even going to do a review if the preview was, you know.
Kaguhime is not getting a review.
That's a good way to tell how good we think a show is how many times we'll talk about it.
At most, we can talk about it three times.
Yeah, and that would be like the best show in the world we talk about three times.
Now, the reason that we're splitting up the review and the final thoughts, just in case you're curious, is simply that we want to have a review of the show that anyone can listen to that won't ruin anything. But when we talk about a show that we've seen all of, we want to have the ability to spoil it so we can actually talk about it.
So basically, the purpose of previewing a show is to know whether you should start watching it now or not. The purpose of a review of a show is, you know, once enough of it is out, you can that's pretty much like, all right, is it a good show or is it a bad show after you've seen enough of it to make a good judgment? And, you know, if you're really, you know about a show and you want to know whether it's good or not, the review is what you're looking for. And the final thoughts is like more of a discussion of the show itself. So if you've already seen the show and you want to hear us talk about what happened in the show in a nerdy discussion, that's what Final Thoughts is for.
Yeah, and if you want a nice example of that, go back to the one we did about Big O 2, the end of that one. We ranted for like an hour about the existential blah, blah, blah.
Allegory, whatever. Yeah, I think we should do the same thing for, you know, video games and stuff.
Yeah, I think that'll be our terminology from now on. We'll probably make a post or a forum thing about it at some point.
Yeah, board games don't really need that. Board games, pretty much you played it, you can talk about it. You know.
Now, like we said, we'll talk about Kaguhime first, and this is a first look or a preview.
All right, so Kaguhime was a pretty normal magical girl show.
It looked like it had potential just based on the opener and the first little bit of it.
Yeah, I mean, the girl had bunny ears and stuff, and there was a guy and another girl and whatever, and there was a school, I think, but the school didn't play into it so much.
Yeah, it started out really kind of weird.
And they had this really blatant Alice in Wonderland metaphor, but it was actually a big part of the show. Like, they would just keep saying Alice, 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 and they, you know, Looking Glass, and there were rabbits everywhere, and clocks, and pocket watches, and...
But it's actually quite literally, they're looking for... Basically, they're looking for the way to make the Lost Alice, or the Infinite Alice, which is the last book in the Alice in Wonderland series that was never written.
Yeah, because it's Alice in Wonderland, then there's Alice in the Looking Glass, and there's, like, you know, some imaginary third book. So the point of the show is that they're trying to get the third book.
Now, the show wouldn't have been that bad, because, I mean, I'm a man who sat through all of Sailor Moon, so I can take a magical girl show pretty handily.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of magical girl shows, but I wouldn't mind watching Fancy Lala to find out what happens to those dinosaurs.
Now, Kaguhime wouldn't have been that bad, except that it had 100% more horrible rape than I expect from a magical girl show.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a hentai, man.
Oh my god. I'm not sure what to say other than that in the first 5 minutes of the first episode, the main character magical girl horribly rapes another magical girl with a giant key. And then the same thing happens again near the end of the episode.
Yeah, we're not even joking. Like, she takes this giant key, we're talking like Kingdom Hearts key, jams it into this girl's chest and starts turning it. And the girl is just crying and whimpering as if she is being raped.
I really don't know how to it's like the most, it's horrible. We were watching it and we're looking at each other and we're like, this is just a rape scene that doesn't involve rape. It's just, I don't know what to say.
There were even upskirts and boobage and everything, so it's kind of like, made it even worse.
And I mean, worst
you
part
thought,
is,
you thought like the man love in, what was that, Cluster Edge was bad. That doesn't even come close. I would take that in a second over this key rape business.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still just a happy, cute, magical girl show, but all the magical girls, and there's a whole bunch of them, and they're all trying to get these pages of the book. And you know how they get the page of the book? First, they rape the other girl with the key in this horrible way.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently a book pops out of their chest and it's like their actual life story, like all their innermost secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Then she flips through it, finds a piece she likes, rips it out and takes it. Meanwhile, the other girl's screaming, please don't read my secret. it's rape on every level that you can have rape.
They should just call it Rapehime or Kage Rape or something.
I mean, I wish I was kidding. Don't fucking watch the show. It's just terrible.
Unless you really, really like magical girls or raping people with keys.
Yeah.
If you have a key rape fetish.
I mean, we were a little taken aback.
Yeah, so Kagehime, not good.
Yeah, it's not, unless you want to see what we're talking about, because the show is really kind of, like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
show,
yeah, watch the first episode. Go ahead, be my guest.
Yeah, because you might be thinking, there's no way they're serious. There's no way there's actually rape in that cute magical girl show that's not at all a hentai.
Oh.
No, yeah.
Oh, and it's not hentai, by the way, for real. Not
yeah, it's
hentai.
Really not hentai. Nothing bad is shown other than the horrible rape.
Yep. So, nothing bad. Nothing bad is shown except the horrible rape.
It's, yeah.
I think that's enough of that. So,
all right, I want to talk about a real show now.
Last Exile. It's on DVD now, all of it. It's been out for a while, actually. We're just slow in watching it.
I mean, I hadn't really seen any of it until we started watching it recently.
I hadn't seen the first DVD, and I knew it was good, but it, like, always got put down on the list under other stuff. And then, like, when I started watching Full Metal Alchemist, I just had no time to watch this one. So it fell by the wayside, and now we picked it up again.
And I got to say, it's regrettable that it fell by the wayside. Last Exile is fairly awesome.
It's damn awesome. Holy crap, awesome.
Pretty much, it has all the tidings of an anime, of a good, engaging, solid show. It starts right away with a good plot. The plot makes sense. The plot's contiguous.
The characters are good.
There are so many characters, and they're all fleshed out and unique.
And it's not like, you know, those other animes we talked about recently where you didn't get to know the characters because they were in it for 2 seconds. There's the right number of characters that you can, you know them all. And
yep.
They're cool, most of them.
And the thing is, even the characters you don't get to know, they're still really fleshed out. Like, there's this one character, you only see him like 3 or 4 times in the whole show. At least as far as we've seen. And you don't know much about him. But he does things, and he's about as developed as that kind of character can be.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, the one thing that bothers me about the show is that it's so... It feels like someone wrote an RPG and then decided they couldn't make an RPG and made an anime instead.
The thing is, I kind of like that because it feels like an RPG. Like, oh, now they're playing the Getting Fish game. Oh, now, like, it's all RPG, like, anime-style music is through the whole thing.
Well, it's good because RPG plots tend to be good and enjoyable. And, like, there's nothing more that I want than to get an RPG plot without actually having to push A 1,000 times in the combat system. But at the same time, the parts of the show that are just so blatantly, like, mini-game are a little bit, like, it's not painful, but it's, like, a little twinge. It's like, oh, RPG. You
see,
know?
To me, I think,
it doesn't really fit in.
I think, haha, RPG.
Well, if they did it more blatantly, you know, instead of this, like, trying to be subtle, but not really, and they did it less often, I think it would be actually good. It would add to the show, but the way it's done, it kind of minuses. Like, one time they're having, like, a race. Oh, that's right. The show is about these kids who fly these things called van ships.
Well, basically, I'll say a bunch of words, and these words together really tell you what the show is about. Steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
Air pirates.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need to know. It's steampunk air pirates.
Yeah, so basically they have these things called van ships, whatever. They're basically fighter planes, but they look different and work on a principle of made-up fantasy.
Yeah, but it seems a lot like a helium-filled thing or a hydrogen-filled thing.
As far as you're concerned, it's just fighter pilots. It just looks different.
It's got a lot of the same feeling that, like, Crimson Skies does.
Yeah. So there's a scene where they're racing them, and it's just so blatant that, like, someone wanted to have a racing minigame in the RPG. And then there's another part where, like, it's just real RPG, especially, like, the music and stuff.
Which is really cool. I mean, the only thing that bothers me in that aspect is that while the overarching plot is not at all predictable, I have no freaking idea what's actually going on yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it's not predictable, it's that you don't have any information. You can't even follow it, really.
But while the overarching plot is unknowable currently, but I don't feel bad about not knowing, because there's no way to know it. I could just make crazy guesses.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, honestly, the show is a lot like Scrap Princess, and I think it's going to go the same way Scrap Princess does, for mm-hmm. anyone who's seen that. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. But anyway,
from what I know about Scrap Princess, I think that it's pretty true.
Well, let me put it this way. I watched Scrat Princess while I was in RIT, basically on my computer, instead of doing a lab that I had to do to graduate. I graduated anyway, but barely. But Scott didn't actually watch the show. He just caught bits of it while I was watching it.
I saw the first few episodes.
Yeah. So when I said the show is a lot like Scrat Princess, Scott says, oh, so you mean the girl's going to explode or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you've seen Scrat Princess, I found that funny.
Mm-hmm. Because it does seem like the girl's going to explode in Last Exile, but we don't know yet. We haven't finished it.
But to get to my point, the individual plot points within the show are very predictable.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much the principle of, if you don't see someone die, they're not dead, but everyone's going to think they're dead. That way you get to have all the character development of them dying, but yet you get to keep them around.
They do that a lot. That's a mechanism a lot of animes use.
It's one of those shows that gives you the sense of no one can die. Like, everything's just always perfect.
You know that people are going to die.
Yeah,
it's
a
serious, good
end.
Anime. Someone always dies.
Yeah, the thing is, we've picked out all the people we think are going to die, and I think we're going to be pretty accurate on that. Like, one character, he's been kind of quiet for most of the show, and then he's about to do something awesome. And we looked at each other, and we basically said, well, he just sealed his fate.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough.
Yep. We were just dead on. That guy, but he was still cool the way he did it. He was awesome.
Now, one thing that I really like is that the technical bits, like the ships and all the technology in this world, is really well-drawn and well-defined and self-consistent.
Oh, yeah, it's very... the consistency is really great. You ever see, like, a racing show and, like, every car... Like, F-Zero is a great example, where every car seems to be working on some different mechanical mechanism. You know, it's like one has a giant engine sticking out the front, one has a rocket in the back. You know, it's all different stuff. This one, it's like everything, you know, it seems like they have a consistent universe with the consistent laws of physics, and they all have the same kind of engine. It's like you even see this sort of flying propulsion mechanism on the van ships, and then the giant capital ship, the Urbanus, has just a giant one sticking out of it. You know, it's pretty cool.
Now, the really cool thing about that is they never come straight out and say how everything works, but... Throughout the show, they always show you like bits of when they're repairing something or when they're talking to each other, and basically you figure out how this stuff all works throughout the course of the show.
It's like if you didn't know anything about cars, but you just sat in the mechanic's garage and watched him and listened to what he was saying, you know, you kind of eventually figure out, oh, so there's this internal combustion going on, you know? So it's sort of like that thing. All the characters know how everything works. And they just talk to each other about stuff the way they normally would, as if they knew how it worked. And then by listening to them, you figure it out.
Now, one thing I got to say is that at first, because the individual plot points are very predictable, and I got the feeling that the love interest romance angle was going to be predictable too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it's not.
No, it
basically,
wasn't.
All the romance you think is going to happen, because that's what happens in any anime like this, not at all. It's all completely backwards, and everyone likes everyone else different, and it's complicated and awesome.
Well, except for the one guy. The musketeer guy.
Yeah, that guy's great.
Actually, I thought he was the main character of the show, if you've never seen it before, because he's the first one you see.
Yeah, he's just this musketeer, because the show starts, we're in the middle of this conflict between two fleets in the sky, and they're fighting in a very chivalrous, like... French-era Napoleon style of two armies standing there shooting muskets at each other, not moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool, but the main character, that you think is the main character at least, is standing there before the battle just chanting to himself, "The bullets will pass me by. The bullets will pass me by."
And then later he becomes a not main character, but, you know, he's got... His big thing is he has these survival medals, because, like... He said that, like, one in three musketeers dies in every battle, so after three battles, you're probably going to die. Yet he survived, like, a whole shit ton of them.
Yeah, the show definitely has this whole chivalry, nobility, royalty, noble blood, we're going to talk about that in a metaphorical way angle going to it.
And it seems to be against the chivalry very much.
You know, it seems to be very much for honor and nobility and very much against... blood, nobility, and silliness.
Yeah. Because it seems like they're trying to say, like, hey, look, this chivalry is pretty dumb, you know? Look at this, just people standing there shooting each other, you know, just ride out. It's really stupid. And you say to yourself, yeah, that is really stupid. But then they show you this war without chivalry, where there's lots of killing and cannons and people just cheating and killing each other. And, You're like, oh, that's even worse, you know. But at the same time, it's not, because it's not. It's sort of less pointless, but more destructive.
Now, I don't know how much more we can really say, because we're like we said, we're trying to really avoid spoiling anything. And more normally, we could talk a lot about the plot of a show without spoiling it. But half of watching Last Exile is just figuring everything out on your own and watching it unfold before you. It's like an adventure.
Yep.
It's like playing an RPG.
Without having to push the buttons.
Yeah. So I can't really say much, give you more information other than just watch the show. Last Exile is well worth watching, and I regret the fact that I hadn't seen it sooner.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this show, get right on that.
I mean, I've even got a little stuffed Lavi. Lavi's the female protagonist.
We got it for a dollar at an out-of-business Media Play.
Yep, we went to Media Play the day before it went out of business for good, 90% off, and I got a little stuffed Lavi.
Whee! Okay, so this is comic that I knew about for quite a while. I just didn't pick up, called Owly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. No, it's called Owly, O-W-L-Y.
Oh, really?
Like a cute owl. Yeah, really. So I got it this week because there really weren't that many new comics this week. So I said, you know what? I can get something old. I'll get Owly. I got the first volume of Owly, which is called The Way Home and The Bittersweet Summer. Oh, I guess those are the names of the two stories contained in it. And it's drawn and written completely by this one guy, Andy Runton.
It's really light, quick reading. I flipped through it and read it in like 2 minutes while I was doing my laundry today.
Yeah, I read it on the train in like maybe 5 minutes. But that's because I took my time and tried to absorb the insane amounts of cute.
I don't know how to describe how cute. There is as much cute in this as there is rape in Kagehime.
No, no. I think the amount of cute in Owly would in this one volume of Owly, it equals the amount of rape in the entire show of Kagehime, every single episode of it.
Now, there's no dialogue in Owly.
Well, there is dialogue. It's just very awesome dialogue.
Yeah, instead of having words, there'll just be a little picture.
So, for example, Owly meets up with Wormy. Wormy's the best character, that at least my favorite character.
He's a little worm.
He's really cute, like everything else in the comic. But Wormy is like, you know, he Owly's like, what happened to you? He doesn't actually say what happened to you, but he's like, there's a question mark. So, and then Wormy, you know, has speech bubbles, and there's like a picture of Wormy getting rained on, and, you know, his a little, you know, dirt
home. Well,
basically,
skip
getting
a bit to the actual, like, try to explain it better.
Yeah.
Owly asks the worm where he's from, where he lives. And the way he says that is the speech bubble shows, like, tree equals house. Picture of a tree equals picture of a house. Mm-hmm. And then Wormy's like, picture of a little mud hut equals house. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like they don't actually use words in the speech bubbles. They just use pictures and symbols. Like, instead of, like, affirmative, they'll be like an exclamation point. And you reading it just from the pictures, because it's so, the art isn't, like, really complicated, awesome art. But the way it's drawn is, like, all the meaning comes across in the picture itself. So the exclamation point, like, speaks, you know, just volumes and volumes of text about what the guy said, and you get the full meaning without actually having a word there.
It's really cute and lighthearted.
And if you're illiterate, you can still read it. So the first story in Owly is about how Owly, well, he's this owl, and he's really cute, and he's the main character.
You know, I would just like to say that considering how simple it is, I don't think we should really go into a plot synopsis.
You don't want to do a plot synopsis?
That would kind of ruin Owly.
I guess, yeah.
Even though it's fairly predictable, as one would expect.
All right, just if you like cute.
It's real cute.
Like,
I enjoyed it. It was worth the, well, I didn't spend any money on it. It was worth the money Scott spent on it.
That's for sure. I recommend if you get it and then share it with everyone, like little kids, parents, grandma.
Yeah, honestly, I think this would be an excellent book for a small child.
Yeah.
It's also an excellent book for me.
It's an excellent book for everybody.
That's unless you hate owls. I mean, if you really hate owls and worms and little raccoon florists, you're not going to like Owly.
Yeah, if you don't like hummingbirds, you won't like Owly either.
Oh, the hummingbirds. They're the best characters as far as I'm concerned.
Nah, it's all about Wormy. But the if you don't like cute things either, I don't think you'll like Owly. So, they're apparently going to make stuffed owlies soon. I don't know if I'll be able to resist.
Yeah, we'll probably have a house full of stuffed owlies.
I think they're only going to make a few thousand. We'll only get one.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for our opening theme.
Be sure to visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com. If you like our podcasts, you'll love our forums. Make sure you visit them. You can send your email feedback to geeknights@gmail.com. And if you want, you can leave us a voicemail at 206-333-1537.
Geek Nights airs every weeknight, Monday through Thursday.
Geek Nights is recorded with absolutely no studio and no audience. But unlike those other talk shows, it's actually recorded at night.